Today's story is about a man who planned and hosted a party. He invited the guests beforehand and then sent his servant to remind the guests when the food was prepared. But when the party was set to begin, everyone had reasons to miss. And while it's sometimes argued that these were poor excuses, and the word excuses is even used in this translation, others say that in this context, these weren't invalid reasons. Economic hardship, even a recent wedding, were both considered legitimate reasons to decline an invitation. And we know that there is indeed a difference between a reason and an excuse. These were reasonable justifications for missing the party in this context. So today's message isn't about sorry excuses. It's not about those who can afford to decline an invitation to a great banquet, but ultimately miss out on their opportunity. Or a man angry at his friends, in turn bringing in whomever he can muster simply to fill the seats. Today, I'd like to share this story through the lens of the host inviting those who were considered invisible, who were on the fringes of society, often rejected, to his table. He intentionally invites the poor, sick, the blind, and the lame, and then he indiscriminately invites people off the streets. And as we read this, we should know this isn't about people with these particular identities, poor, sick, disabled. We're also talking about those who more generally wouldn't have typically been invited to this table. As was mentioned, Jesus was at a Pharisee's home attending a gathering. During the gathering, Jesus tells a couple of parables to those present. The parable Jesus tells just before this, as Krista mentioned, offers a lesson about being a guest, which Jill preached on a couple weeks ago, as we know. The message there was to avoid considering oneself the most important person in the room and take the lesser seat, to act out of humility. Now the lesson is about being a host. There are characteristics we attach to being a host: friendliness, generosity, graciousness, and elevating the comfort of others. But Jesus also viewed it as an act by which we gain some amount of power over another. For those who host have resources. They have enough to be able to offer food and drink to those outside their family. But being invited often had strings attached, and those who could not repay or reciprocate the offer were rarely invited. As Jill mentioned a couple of weeks ago, table language and imagery is important, biblically speaking. Fellowship at the table was laden with meaning and implications, social, economic, and religious. It is, in fact, one of the most important practices of our Christian faith, and our denomination specifically has a history of placing much focus on coming to the table. Banquets offered a chance for philosophers and teachers to impart their wisdom. It was also a time in which the well-to-do brought others to the table who were equally so. And that is not untrue for us today. As our call to worship reminded us, we celebrate, laugh, and play around tables. We grieve, debate, even fight around tables. Important decisions are made around tables. Those who have power can bring important people to their tables. There is status around who we are able to seat at our tables and whose tables we are invited to sit at. So who are we inviting to our tables? This answer is a bit painful for me, for as I explore this question myself, I realize that the people most often around my table are a lot like me. Most of my close friends are white, straight, cisgender, non-disabled, middle-class, U.S. citizens. I hang out with people mostly people who align with my political leanings. And if I'm honest, when I'm at the table with someone expressly different from myself, I sometimes find it hard to authentically connect. And if I'm painfully honest, if we aren't able to find much in the way of shared experience or common ground, it's less likely that I prioritize building a relationship with them. So why is this? Well, simply put, doing the work of understanding and relating with people different from us is hard. We see and hear plenty of stories about those who have been effectively othered, whether we're talking racial, ethnic bias, homophobia, transphobia, gender bias, that around citizenship status, etc. Or maybe we've chosen to believe the stories that work hard at dehumanizing certain groups of people. Or maybe we've even followed the guidance of a religious leader whose theology made little space for people different from themselves. Maybe we had a parent who was intolerant and taught us that intolerance too. And it can feel overwhelming. With language that is always evolving, it can be hard to keep up with what's currently the most sensitive and compassionate way to talk about things. It can be daunting. We make mistakes, and that feels vulnerable. Sometimes it just feels safest to stick with what we know. And last, this is hard to say, but it's true for myself too. Some of us have the ability to not deal with people who are different from us. If you're part of the majority, white, straight, cisgender, Christian, middle class, a U.S. citizen, we can easily enough find people like us. And we can surround ourselves with them, which insulates us from having to be exposed to what life is like for others. But Jesus calls us to invite those with identities that differ from ours to our tables. There are other passages in which these particular groups of people are mentioned: the poor, the sick, the disabled, the forgotten, ignored, marginalized. The difference about this passage, though, is that they aren't mentioned here as those we help. This story is not about service. The host did not have the food taken out to the streets. He invited the people inside to his table, host and guest together. In Brandon Robertson's book, True Inclusion, which we've talked about here and several of us are reading right now, Robertson gently reminds us that the kingdom of heaven is something we are called to strive for here and now. The kingdom John describes in Revelation is what we see in Jesus' life and teachings. To use Robertson's language, it is the radical unifying of all people across all of the barriers that divide them. According to Jesus, he says, the kingdom is a very tangible reality in which all people are reconciled and embraced, all injustices overturned, and all of creation is restored. I suspect that if this is what God has envisioned for us, it is what we are called to do here and now. So how do we do this? we can practice something called cultural humility, which is being other-oriented when it comes to aspects of identity that are most important to the person you're talking with or connecting with. Become the learner. Not in a teach me everything about your culture kind of way, as we know it's not fair to expect any one person to teach us all things related to their identity group, nor is it possible for any one person to represent their identity group in its entirety. Cultural humility is letting people share their experiences, listening and believing them. It is not minimizing or questioning their experience. It invites us to take into account a person's multiple identities and the unique ways their experiences shape their worldview. It affirms that people are the expert on their own lives. It invites connection rather than disconnection. We can do this by sitting at new and different tables, tables you've not sat at before, and then invite some of those new friends to your table, to our table here. And since God is the ultimate host, we as hosts should behave as guests, making no claims, setting no conditions, expecting no return. We must also go inward. Practices like self-reflection and mindfulness encourage us to start paying attention to why we do what we do. Why do I have the friends I do? Why don't I have a more diverse friend group? Do I believe that God intends for our tables to look different? How can I live into that? Mindfulness specifically is shown to lower implicit bias because we're more intentionally considering our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, learning from ourselves about ourselves, and shifting accordingly. Last, don't lose heart. These are hard, heavy things. Sometimes we feel defensive and it's hard to look at our own behavior and our thought process. Care for yourself as you process ways to become more inclusive in your own life and in the life of the church. We are here to connect. We aren't meant to participate in the maintenance of barriers that keep us from understanding, learning from, and loving one another. We're meant to push ourselves beyond, to lean into the discomfort, and learn through it. Our tables are richer and bolder and more beautiful when they include everyone. And the more diversity our communities welcome and embrace, the more we reflect the image and likeness of our multifaceted God. Jesus is inviting us to live like God, sharing our table, expecting nothing in return, affirming and embracing, not simply tolerating, and a clear sign of acceptance, of recognizing others as equals, is breaking bread together. For as we continue asking who isn't at the table and authentically seek ways to invite them and to learn, we are getting closer to the kingdom. Yes, it is hard work, but it is the very core of who we are, which means that we indeed have it within us. Amen.